Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking today about things that we do that we shouldn't at the beginning of our program. Normally, I will give you information on foods or herbs or nutrients or lifestyle that enhances our well-being. But today I'm thinking about all the people who are doing things thinking that they're good, but they actually are not. I think this on this day will be important as well. For example, I'm going to talk about how a common prostate cancer treatment causes cancer to spread throughout the body. I'll talk about how radiation treatment for breast cancer causes cancer in other breasts. I'll talk about why we should pay attention to coughing. I was just traveling, and as I was flying back into New York, there was a person sitting one seat away that was coughing, not covering their hands, their mouth with their hands, but even that doesn't stop all the particulate matter from going in the air. Fortunately, I had anticipated in every flight I take, this might happen, so I did some protection. I'll tell you what I do to protect myself when I'm on a plane or in a concert or anything else. We're going to have to be in these environments. That's normal. But it doesn't mean we should intentionally make ourselves susceptible. So that is important. Also, cancer research for 10 years was absolutely useless and possibly even fraudulent. And we'll get to that. Additionally, when it comes to taking so-called pick-me-uppers, one of the most important pick-me-uppers out there is Adderall. And it can trigger in some 25 million people taking it, mainly to help them have more energy. People who drive at night, cab drivers, truck drivers on long hauls will use Adderall. School teachers are using it. Students all over the place are using it, but a lot of people are using it because it gives them that up feeling. Well, I'm going to tell you the downside of that. Also, one of the biggest phenomena in America are what we do by ritual to support things like breast cancer awareness, and everybody wears pink. We never stop and ask, can you prove to me that what we're supporting will lead to less cancer or better treatment for people who have cancer? We never ask the outcomes, and we should. Otherwise, it's just another benefit, another way for celebrities to make themselves relevant and seem human. And not that they're not, but it's a good PR mix. I'll give you some inside information on that. But now I'm going to show you from Yale University, Yale News, costly breast cancer screening doesn't give you a better outcome, but it goes beyond that. I'm going to also tell you about cancer screening has never saved lives. Who says? The British Medical Journal says. And also when it comes to depression, you've been told in all those ads that it's a brain chemical imbalance. Well, it actually is not. They have never had a study in human history to prove it. How do they get away with it? Seven facts about depression that will tell you the truth. Also, seven reasons America's mental health industry is a threat to our sanity. Now, this is something I know a great deal about. In fact, I've written many articles. One of the longest articles ever published in the Town's Letter for Doctors and Patients on the dangers of the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Dr. Martin Feldman and I wrote that. But this is from a psychiatrist, Dr. Bruce Levine. So we're going to see what a psychiatrist has to say about his own profession. I'm also doing a documentary right now on manufacturing madness, which completely deconstructs the entire mental health field. And you could never take formaldehyde orally. It would be considered a poison, a carcinogen. Why is it not considered a poison to carcinoma when it's in your vaccines? I'll explore that. So that's what we're going to do on the health field. Then I wanted to do a couple of things. I wanted to give you some glimpses into why I'm concerned about the Democrats and the liberals supporting Hillary Clinton, and why Bernie Sanders has not brought up any of the above, and he should. I also give you my opinion about him running as a third-party candidate, where he would be a shoo-in. He would beat either Hillary or he'd beat Donald. Why isn't he talking about it? Why wouldn't he consider doing it? I'll give you the reasons why we're told, but then I'll give you a different opinion. Then we're going to listen to Abby Martin from the Empire Files talk about what Hillary Clinton really represents and why isn't this being discussed? Why is it just about her emails? There's a whole lot worse that she and Bill Clinton have done, and people should know about it if they want to make a reasoned choice. Also, I found a little clip. It's only about 25 seconds. But in it, a journalist asked her 5 times why she supported Al-Qaeda in Syria and Libya. And I want you to see her response. Because during her tenure as Secretary of State, she provided financial military support to Al-Qaeda affiliated groups in Syria and Libya. And when We Are Change asks for an explanation, I want you to see her response. Also, I feel it's important that people understand the Syrian war and what you're not being told. What's really going on in Syria? I want you to look at the evidence, because the American media got it all wrong. The New York Times got it wrong. No one has acknowledged they got it wrong. Well, I want to show you the proof that everyone got it wrong. And you should listen to this. So this is a typical program, but I'm going to ask you to call in after the 3 short clips you're going to hear a little later on and give your input. So that's where we're going today. Oh, by the way, Obama has been at war longer than any other president in American history. So why don't we give him another Nobel Prize for peace? The Nobel Prize has no value in my mind now. They gave it to Henry Kissinger, never should have gotten it. They gave it to some people who should not have had it. Let's begin. First up, a lot of men in this audience right now have problems with their prostate. I know because they email all the time. Androgen deprivation therapy, commonly used in the treatment of prostate cancer, according to David Gutierrez, may actually make cancer more likely to spread than to other parts of the body. That's according to a study at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine and published in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer Research. Now, why is this important? Because prostate cancer growth is generally stimulated by male sex hormones. Androgen deprivation therapy, in which those hormones are suppressed, is often given to patients in order to slow tumor growth. And prior research has demonstrated that a protein called nestin, N-E-S-T-I-N, tends to be produced by the prostate cancer cells that have metastasized to other parts of the body. Nestin does not appear to be produced by cancer cells. However, in cases where the cancer has not spread, researchers experimented on androgen-dependent prostate cancer cells in the laboratory. And when they cut off the cell's access to androgen, the cells increased their production of nestin. So that's what this is about. So I'm concerned that people are using these common treatments for prostate cancer, which do not help men. And remember, when you're cutting off your male testosterone, you're going to end up with muscle atrophy. You're going to end up, your body's going to prematurely age. You'll become weak. You'll start to get creepy skin around the neck, the legs, because you won't have that tautness in the muscles anymore. So there are other treatments that are available. First and foremost, for all men who care about their prostate, understand that the prostate becomes enlarged when it becomes inflamed. It becomes inflamed when you're taking highly acidic foods, caffeine, acidic, alcohol, acidic, soft drinks, acidic, sugars, including fructose, acidic, fried foods, acidic. Last night when I was sitting writing commentaries for this week's programs, I was flipping to see what the food channels were offering. I'm always curious. Never do I see anything healthy, and there's this one Dives and I don't know what it is, Diners and Dives or something. Anyhow, this guy goes around, and it's the most unhealthiest food I've ever seen. And the fact that they like how it tastes, they never talk about what does it actually do when it goes into a person's body. So I'm going to, as a public service, in the next year, I'm going to produce, direct, and write a documentary, a short, probably no more than 5 minutes, and I'll put it up on YouTube. And I will show from the time a liquid, like a juice, fresh-made juice, versus a cola goes into your body, a hamburger, cheeseburger, all these french fries goes into your body versus a salad. And I'll actually show you, as if the body is transparent, everything that happens, with my hope being that when you realize that just 100 grams of sugar, 3 ounces, are going to suppress part of your immune system by 50%. So if you've had sugar in your breakfast, sugar in your lunch, sugar in your dinner, half of your immune response is gone for a whole day. That makes you more susceptible to colds, flu, and other illnesses. But it also turns on inflammation in women, in the breast cells, the ovarian cells, uterine cells, and men in your prostate cells. So by turning off inflammation and turning on your more alkaline healing, that's how you protect your prostate. And then if you do already have an inflamed prostate and you're concerned, then start looking at Africanum pygium, stinging nettle extract, sal palmetto, bioflavonoids, isoflavones, vitamin D, high levels of vitamin C, mushroom extracts like shiitake, maitake, oyster extracts, because these will actually help your prostate gland. Something else, we are a very overweight nation. In fact, the latest study shows that 50% of all adults in the United States are suffering from diabetes or prediabetes. That's a whole lot of adults. Mind you, you've got 80 million young people in the United States from birth to 18 years of age. All right, you take them out of the equation of approximately 231, but rounded off to 230, and that's leaving you with approximately 338 million, about 250 million adults. Okay, of those 250 million adults, that means that 125 million adults, more than ever before in history, and more than any other nation per population in the world, has prediabetes, diabetes. And one of the side effects of diabetes is, or one of the causes of diabetes and insulin resistance, is being overweight. So I've said it many times, I'll say it again. It is not humanly possible to be healthy and be overweight. You may think you're healthy because you won't be necessarily diagnosed with a specific classically defined illness. But what you do have is you have a massive amount of inflammation and excess estrogen, especially if you're a man or woman. And one of the things we know promotes cancer is excess estrogen. Now, if you're overweight, that's cancer-causing. If you're stressed, that's cancer-causing. And if you're getting your estrogen also from meat, that's cancer-causing. That's a trifecta. And that really puts you at risk. So this is from AP Science writer Malcolm Ritter. Big belly boosts risk of later dementia. Quote, having a big belly in your 40s can boost your risk of getting Alzheimer's disease and other dementia decades later. So that is important. And this was a big study. So think of how many men and women have big bellies. The majority of adults do. Now, how many in their 40s, 50s and 60s and 70s, probably 85%. You find very few people as a percentage who are healthier the older they get. So just remember, having that big belly will cost you your health, possibly your life. So you've got to exercise. And here's something I got when I got in my elevator today after I finished my run early in the morning. And I get up at 4 a.m., so I do a very early morning run. But there was a person who was just going out as I was getting in. And he said to me, he says, you going to the gym now? I said, yeah, I go to the gym. I do both. And we had a little conversation. And now this is, I won't mention his name, but he's a very famous athlete. He's a very nice guy. And I said to him, if you haven't been made aware of this, the older you get, the more intense you must make your exercise. He said, what do you mean? He said, I thought we were supposed to slow down when we're past 40. I said, just the opposite. You have to speed it up. You have to do more exercise, longer exercise, more intense exercise, and hit every muscle group in your body. We have been living with this myth for decades. And the myth has been, as you get older, you should take it easy. Everything was to take it easy. We didn't even expect people to ever exercise. In fact, I cannot remember a single human being in my hometown ever exercising ever after college. The only people that got any exercise were those who would play in the summertime in a softball league. And that's not really exercise. And my uncle Myron, my father's brother, got a lot of exercise because he was a referee. And he would run up and down the basketball court. So that helped him, but he also smoked, as every member of my family did. Imagine what impact that had on me. Father spoke 3 packs a day, but I also knew he spoke 4 times. My mother, 3 packs a day. My older brother, 3 packs a day. And my younger brother, 1 to 2 packs a day. And that was nonstop. Just everything smelled of cigarette smoke. Now, we didn't know about secondhand smoke then. Now we do. So that would have meant that my body would have been affected as if I were smoking at least 1.5 to 2 packs a day myself. Now, of course, I've never smoked a cigarette. But that's part of the impact you have. It's like being around negative people, not realizing how that impacts your energy level. You always feel drained when you're around angry and negative people. Well, that's the way it works. But we have to understand, and this is important, that that we need to be focused upon detoxifying all the time, exercising all the time. Now, I'm not saying doing long-distance exercise. I'm not saying train for a marathon. But the older you get, the more you do in the way of exercise, the healthier you're going to be. You're stimulating human growth hormone when you exercise. That keeps you younger longer. And you're detoxifying when you exercise. That keeps you younger longer. So just remember, don't get easy. Get really strong. All right? Also, radiation treatment for breast cancer causes cancer in other breasts. This is published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology, where they studied 7,000 women who were treated for breast cancer. And over a 16-year period. And here's what they found, that, quote, young women who receive radiation treatment after breast cancer surgery are significantly more likely to later develop cancer in the other breast than women who do not undergo such radiation. And among the study participants in general, the risk of developing cancer in the opposite breast after treatment in the first breast was 400% higher. Wow. This was done at Erasmus Medical Center in Rotterdam. So everything they're doing with cancer, I believe they're doing wrong. Chemotherapy drugs are wrong. They have no quality studies showing that it reverses cancer, cures cancer. They have no long-term studies showing against real placebos not using another chemotherapy, but an actual sugar pill that that improves the quality of life and length of life substantially. They just play these games. And both chemotherapy is carcinogenic and radiation is carcinogenic. Now, that's important. Why? Because here is a study that people were not made aware of. Quote, costly breast cancer screening doesn't add up to better outcomes, from Yale News by Karen Parrott. Quote, even though Medicare spends over $1 billion per year on breast cancer screening, such as mammography, there is no evidence that higher spending benefits older women. Researchers at Yale School of Medicine found in a study published in online First Journal of the American Medical Association, Internal Medicine. Okay. So, once again, it showed that mammography didn't work. Now, that's Yale University. But there is another study. This is from Sarah G. at GreenMed Info. Quote, cancer screening has never saved lives. Quote, millions have marched for cancer causes. Millions more have been diagnosed early and now believe screening saved their lives. But a new study confirms something we have been reporting since our inception. In most cases, screening not only has not saved life, but it actually increases your risk of dying. An extremely important new study published in the British Medical Journal entitled, quote, Why Cancer Screening Has Never Been Shown to Save Lives and What We Can Do About It, end quote, confirms something we have been reporting, and that cancer screening has not lived up to its long-held promise of saving lives because disease-specific reductions in mortality, that's death, do not equate the reductions in overall mortality. Worse, in some cases, overall death actually increased because of screening. For instance, we have reported extensively on the widespread misclassification of ductal carcinoma in pseudo, as they call it a bona fide malignant cancer, but it's not. And as a result, that's led to an epidemic of 1.3 million women being diagnosed with ductal carcinoma in pseudo and then being treated with chemotherapy, radiation, radical mastectomy, lumpectomy. In other words, they're hitting your breast with everything medicine has. But according to the National Cancer Institute itself, it acknowledges that this should be, this ductal carcinoma in pseudo should be, quote, classified as a benign or indolent lesion of epithelial origin. And the New England Journal of Medicine published a study that approximately 1.3 million women were diagnosed with ductal carcinoma in pseudo in the past 30 years, with most receiving either mastectomy, lumpectomy, radiation, chemotherapy, or some combined therapy, and that plays havoc and could actually lead to women's death. So, and you have all these false positives, and that is how bad it is. Now, why wouldn't these women get a thermography? Thermography places no radiation in the body. It just measures the differentiation in heat of different tissues in the body. And cancer is a hotter cell, shows up differently. So that's the safe way of being diagnosed. And that I support. Now, separately, this is from, and we thank Roman Bistrinic for finding this, from Health Sentinel, April 1948. I just downloaded this today. The article was published in the journal Pediatrics, right? That's the official journal of all pediatricians. Quote, this is from the article from Pediatrics, but it's 1948. Quote, inspection of the records of the Children's Hospital for the past 10 years has disclosed 15 instances in which children develop acute cerebral symptoms within a period of hours after administration of the pertussis vaccine. The children varied between 5 and 18 months in age, and in so far as it is possible to judge, children of this age range were developing normally according to history supplied by their parents. None had convulsions previously. 12 of the children were boys, 3 were girls. And then it went on to talk about how they ended up not being able to sit, walk, had all forms of inflammation happen after the vaccines. So you fast forward 60 years to the present, where parents state that they were children had developed normally until the time of a vaccine. And then they got the autism. They couldn't sit, walk, talk, or any of the things children normally do at 12 to 30 months following a major regression. And that's just absolutely what's going on with this modern epidemic. So when we're told that they didn't have knowledge of this, yeah, they did, in 1948. So now we have proof positive that the medical community, specifically pediatricians, knew the differences about the pertussis vaccine. And they're still not doing anything today to make this whole concept. And then I found other medical journals from way back when, decades ago, that also brought this up, but no one was doing anything about it. And also, here is something that I just found from PreventDisease.com. Quote, the more vaccines an infant received in his first year, the higher the death rate. Let me repeat that. The more vaccines an infant receives in its first year, the higher the death rate. Now, we're heard all over the world, and we are one of probably four centers or individuals disseminating information on vaccines for the past 30 years. I was the first to have Robert Mendelson on my program, who is a commissioner of health in the state of Illinois. He was a board-certified pediatrician. He was a professor. And I brought him into New York to do a whole discussion for a whole week each day in the 1980s on vaccines. So there's Suzanne Humphreys, there's Nancy Banks, there's Tony Bark. There are a number, but only a small number. And everyone who does their homework, meaning at least 10,000 hours of research, more than any physician in America, will tell you that the more vaccines you give a baby in the first year of life, the more likely they are to die. Quote, here's from the study. How many babies have to die for doctors to get it? Synergistic toxicity is a well-known phenomenon where the combination of toxic substances can be greater than the sum of its parts. Therefore, mixing two non-lethal levels of chemicals inside a vaccine can lead to an extremely toxic mix. The medical community appears to gloss over this very pertinent fact that appears to progressively be killing more infants every year. Synergistic toxicity refers to the effect that when exposed to two toxins, the toxicity level is far greater than the additive toxicity levels of the two separately. A good example demonstrating synergistic toxicity. In a study on mice, Schubert et al. Combined effects in toxicology, published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Toxicology and Environmental Health, volume 4763, the study took the amount of mercury, salts, that kills 1 in 100 mice, and 1/20th the amount of lead salts that kills 1 in 100 mice. But when the same amount of mercury and lead salt were together, the synergistic toxicity of these two toxins killed 100 in 100 mice. So you went from 1 in 100 from either one, lead or mercury, and it was 100 out of 100 killed the mice when put together. So it's important to understand the concept of synergistic toxicity, as research is increasingly showing that different toxins are typically synergistic rather than additive in the human body. However, when testing is performed on a toxicity of a substance, the level of harm is set based upon the assumption that the substance is only toxic to the body as a single item. That's just insane, absolutely insane. There's an article published in Human Experimental Toxicology Journal found a direct statistical correlation between higher vaccine doses and infant death rates. It is a confirmation that many anti-vaccine advocates have long awaited and further established as an adds to preliminary evidence that vaccinations are toxic poisons having no place in the human body. The study, entitled Infant Mortality Rates Regressed Against Number of Vaccine Doses Routinely Given, Is There a Biochemical and Synergistic Toxicity, was conducted by Gary Gordon and Neil Z. Miller, who've been studying this for 25 years. What that meant is the fewer vaccines you give, the less death you have. And how bad are we in deaths of children given vaccines? We're number one. Number one in the world. And right behind us, Canada and Australia, because they have mandatory 24 vaccines. In Canada, we have 26 in the United States. We shouldn't be giving any. And so now for all of you who are concerned about vaccine safety, that's more information. Now, the full studies will be published online at progressiveradionetwork.com. And finally, this is from the Daily Beast. Can Adderall abuse trigger temporary schizophrenia? Quote, by the time 36-year-old Scott Hahn caused a fatal crash on the New Jersey Turnpike of this year, he had taken 10 Adderall pills, been awake for more than a day. The accident took the lives of a local teacher, Tim O'Donnell, and his 5-year-old daughter, Bridget, and revived old concerns about the drug's link to erratic behavior. Those present in the minutes before the crash say Hahn was swerving in and out of lanes and driving erratically in the moments before the crash when he sent O'Donnell's car flying into the eastbound lane. Now he faces up to 30 years in prison for aggravated manslaughter and vehicular homicide. This is a story over the reminder of dangers of stimulants. Amphetamines come with a host of negative side effects, most commonly insomnia and irregular heartbeat. But in less common cases, the drug can induce a psychosis that is nearly identical to schizophrenia, so close, in fact, that scientists use it to study the disease. Far from a new discovery, it's something that scientists and pharmaceuticals companies have known about for decades. Adderall, that's A-D-D-E-R-A-L-L, was officially approved by the Food and Drug Administration in 1960 and has in recent years become ubiquitous. How common is it? Well, in just a 4-year period, sales increased by 3,000%. 3,000%. So the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, listed as a Schedule II substance with the likes of cocaine and OxyContin, as the amount of prescriptions have increased, pharmacies have struggled to keep up with demand. And today, according to the American Chemical Society, an estimated 25 million people are taking amphetamines to help them focus. Well, I know an awful lot of people who wouldn't be using it to focus, but rather because it allows them to stay up later. And that's dangerous. So get off the drugs. But that's also, like Ritalin, they're giving this to kids that don't need it, shouldn't have it, and it can only hurt them. One last thing. What's in a cough? So the next time you don't think it's a big deal when people are sneezing around you or coughing, think again. As many as 20,000 viruses are expelled in an average cough, which may be sufficient to infect you. And Singapore's National University Hospital Division of Microbiology said as many as 3,000 tiny droplets are produced in a standard cough. 3,000 water particulate matters come out. And they're small, about 1 to 5 microns in diameter. It adds up. That's all in one cough. So enough to cause you to get sick. All right? So one of the things you can do is remember, every time you pick up a telephone, there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of droplets that have come out of someone's mouth talking right up to the telephone. That's without them sneezing. That's just normal conversation. You're expelling water droplets that have whatever virus and bacteria are in your body in there. So always take a paper towel, little dispenser of alcohol or hydrogen peroxide on all surface areas. Simply spray and wipe. Spray and wipe. Doorknobs, spray and wipe. If you're in a subway, simply, it's virtually not, in, it's completely discreet. Just spray a small Kleenex or piece of a paper towel with hydrogen peroxide and alcohol. Then you can hold the poles and no one sees it, and yet you're not being infected. Because you hold the pole, everyone else that held the pole, everything is in their hands, and the average person touches their mouth, their nose about at least 200 times a day, and many several thousand times a day. You're not getting what's in their mouth. That's important. And when I'm on a plane, I always spray colloidal silver in my nostrils and around my lips. I wear a little tiny purification device. They're common out there. They're a ionic air filter. It'll create a barrier with about 12 inches. So anything coming in within 12 inches of your head can be neutralized as far as bacteria. And then take yourself some known antiviral, like a little bit of Manuka honey. And just every hour, just take a little bit, maybe an eighth of a teaspoon, and put it in your mouth with one spray of colloidal silver. That's going to kill any bacteria or virus that get into your body. All right? Simple things. I'm Gary Noll. Now, we're going to take a brief break, and then we're going to come back, and then we're going to hear some audio clips, and then I'm going to open it up for you to call in and give your responses. Please stay with us. Welcome, all of you. We're going to have a few audio clips now, and we're going to start with a couple very short ones. And the first one we're going to go to is only about 35 seconds, and it's with a member of the media asking Hillary Clinton why she was supporting Al-Qaeda in Libya and Syria. Listen up.
Hey, Hillary, why did you support Al-Qaeda in Syria and Libya? Are you just going to laugh? It's a very serious question, Ms. Hillary Clinton.
Excuse me, sir, we can actually...
Why did you support Al-Qaeda in Syria and Libya?
Sir?
It's a very serious question. We're supposed to be fighting them. U.S. intervention always happens with a political agenda.
Excuse us, sir. This is not the time. I'm sorry. This is not the time.
This is the only time we ever get, so we got to take advantage of it. We're accepting members of the press. We're just asking a simple question. We mean no problems. But Al-Qaeda in Libya and Syria, why did you support those rebels? Al-Qaeda in Syria and Libya. Hillary. Why did you support them? Why did you support Al-Qaeda in Syria and Libya? Are you just going to laugh?
All that she did was laugh. What wasn't laughing matter to the four Americans who were killed? But also, it's not a laughing matter that she and the president, the national defense agencies, all knew, the Defense Department, all knew that it was the annex was attacked because it had been used as a staging area to bring weapons from Gaddafi's arsenals over to the annex and then get them on boats and ship them across the Mediterranean to Turkey and Syria, where it would be used there to fight Assad. Now, that's illegal, and that would be breaking all forms of international law. It would also make them look very bad because it would have given a different reason what they said for this attack. So she just laughs things off. Here's another thing that you have not heard, and that is I'm going to play about it's about 27 minutes. I'm going to play about 8 minutes of this, where you have Abby Martin, who's an outstanding reporter and who does not mince words, taking an honest look from the Empire Files, exposing Hillary Clinton and what she really represents. And this is to all the Democrats and Republicans who think, well, you know, she would make it great. Great for whom? She is absolutely the strongest neocon power in the United States at this moment.
As the circus of the 2016 presidential election grinds on, Hillary Clinton has posited herself as the candidate of the people. But not many candidates of the people have vacation homes in the Hamptons that cost $200,000 per month or hang out with the world's billionaires. You know, it's hard to know who she really is. While once being a proponent of Donald Trump-type positions like building a wall at the Mexican border, supporting torture, and opposing same-sex marriage until 2013, today, Hillary Clinton presents herself as the anti-Trump, anti-Republican candidate. There's been a lot of outrage about the impression that the establishment has already anointed her as the Democratic nominee and has carved out her path to the presidency. But like in 2008, her guaranteed seat on the throne is being derailed by the unpredictable moods of the masses and millions of young progressive voters. She continues to play her shape-shifting game, morphing her positions to try to capture the support from her opponent. But the real Hillary is still inside. In fact, every layer of Hillary's career shows why. Far from being a candidate of the people, she's the top pick by corporations to do the real job of any U.S. president, be the CEO of the empire. And they're working hard to keep her on that path to the throne. Having been party insiders for decades, the Clintons have manipulated D.C. reporters, mastered the media spin, and have a well-oiled PR machine at their beck and call.
Hillary Clinton has done everything right. She has run a good campaign. She has outperformed in debates. She's raised money. She's got a great ground game.
As a Latina, I can tell you that Latinos all over the country are very excited about Hillary. Latina women are very excited about Hillary.
Knew from the beginning that when the conversation turned to foreign policy, that this was going to be when Hillary Clinton really shined. And I think that that whole exchange was probably one of her strongest moments of the night.
Undisclosed is that many of the people praising Hillary across the corporate media work at firms employed by Clinton's campaign and super PACs. It's not just paid pundits, but the reporters and owners themselves. From Chris Matthews to the head of the New York Times, a big gang of media personalities have financial and personal ties to the Clintons. But even with Citizens United and unfettered corporate funding, the establishment can't prevent an insurgent candidate like Bernie Sanders from winning with votes. Which is why back in 1984, the Democratic Party created a superdelegate process to further undermine democracy. Here's how it works. There's about 4,000 pledged delegates divided by primary and caucus results. But there's an additional 700 superdelegates that remain unpledged, meaning they can vote against the people's will to ensure nominees are handpicked party insiders. The single vote of a superdelegate is worth thousands of ours. Many of these people are current and former members of Congress, but dozens more are literally corporate lobbyists, working on behalf of every industry from healthcare to private prisons. Like superdelegate Tonio Burgos, Pfizer lobbyist and Clinton fundraiser. Or superdelegates Jill Alper, Minion Moore, and Maria Cardona at Dewey Square Group, a lobbying firm that works directly with the Clinton campaign and lobbied on behalf of healthcare corporations to craft Obamacare for their benefit. Then there's superdelegate Jeff Berman, top lobbyist at Brian Cave, and former lobbyist for the Keystone XL Pipeline and Geo Group private prisons. Berman is even paid by the Clintons to round up other superdelegate votes. This unelected nobility comprises one-third of all delegates needed to secure the Democratic nomination. And the Clintons are surrounded by a flock of Democratic Party politicians who know the career benefits of hitching their wagon to the most powerful family in Washington. And with bills cajoling, Hillary had at least 500 superdelegate pledges under her belt months before the election had even begun. A 45-1 delegate lead over Sanders. This insane Democratic inversion plays out every time Sanders crushes a state, like in Wyoming, where he won by double digits but walked away with the same number of delegates. It's not just superdelegates investing in Hillary. Every arm of the corporatocracy has been hedging their bets on her for almost two decades. Alongside media conglomerates Cablevision and Time Warner, five of Hillary's top 10 political donors since 1999 have been some of the most powerful banks: Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, and Lehman Brothers. But those numbers pale in comparison to how much Wall Street firms have graciously donated to Hillary's super PAC, to the tune of $15 million. Beyond banks, every industry has been buying into another Clinton presidency. Lobbying groups for private prison giants Geo Group and Corrections Corporation of America are bundling dollars to the Ready for Hillary PAC. Hillary's also been given more money from Big Pharma than any other candidate, and received over a third of total contributions given out by pharmaceutical giants. The defense industry thinks she's good for business, too. Defense contractor employees have given her more cash than any other candidate. Fossil fuel lobbyists are also working hard to elect Hillary. Her 2016 campaign received more than $4.5 million from lobbyists, bundlers, and donors connected to the world's biggest polluters. Their investment will pay off tenfold. Hillary has been at the forefront of promoting fracking, a dangerous and destructive method of natural gas extraction. And she's much more than just a supporter of fracking. She personally created a bureau at the State Department focused on spreading it around the world with one of her major sponsors, Chevron. The Clintons sell their friendship through other avenues, such as huge honorariums for speaking fees. Much like George W. Bush's motivational speaking tour, Bill and Hillary are quick to exploit themselves for corporate loot. But they don't come cheap. Averaging $211,000 a pop, Bill and Hillary made more than $153 million in paid speeches to elite think tanks and closed-door boardrooms since 2001. In 2013, the year after leaving the State Department, Hillary made $3 million giving just 12 speeches to Wall Street banks and financial institutions. This calculates to her earning $5,000 per minute. Seems like good, honest work to me. Demands to release the speech transcripts have been laughed off by Hillary. But we don't really need to see the transcripts because we already know what's in them. Her praising banks and committing to their prosperity. Although Hillary has recently tried to appear critical of Wall Street to pander to Sanders' immense support, her fat cat banker donors aren't worried in the slightest, saying her talking points about inequality are, quote, just politics. But how did Hillary Clinton become such a political force that the empire's biggest powerhouses and establishment elites flock to her with money and support? Hillary was born in 1947 to a wealthy textile wholesaler who unsuccessfully ran for public office. She has two brothers, one a failed businessman, the other a failed politician. Both have their own history of public scandals. Hillary's first political work was campaigning for the Donald Trump of the 60s, far-right Republican Barry Goldwater. Hillary maintains that she was proud to be a Goldwater girl and writes off her support for the offensive character as just youthful ignorance. But the timing tells a different story. This was in 1964 when the Civil Rights Act was passed.
This is only a part of part one. I will play other parts on upcoming programs. So just remember, setting aside her current scandals, just the history of what they've done, I'll be showing you in the upcoming weeks. And for those who say, well, we support Obama, understand what you're supporting. You're supporting a man who has prosecuted more whistleblowers than all other presidents combined, who has sentenced whistleblowers to 31 times the jail time of all prior U.S. presidents combined, who's prosecuted fewer financial crimes than President Reagan, Clinton, or either of the Bush's presidents. As bad as the Bush administration was, they at least prosecuted the heads of Enron, WorldCom, and some other white-collar crooks. In contrast, Obama hasn't prosecuted even one high-level Wall Street executive. Obama is the most secretive president ever. Obama is more hostile to the press than any other president in history. Claims the power to strip Americans of liberty in a way that no other president has ever tried to claim, and that even King George of England didn't claim. Indeed, Obama has rolled back some of our liberties in the time of the enactment of the Magna Carta in 1215. He's turned America into the most spied upon nation in world history. He has arguably centralized power more than any other president. He has granted less pardons than any other president since Garfield. And he may be the only U.S. president in history who failed to deliver a single year of at least 3% economic growth adjusted for inflation. And he also served under the greatest inequality of any president in American history. And for the first time in its history, that America is viewed as the world's greatest threat by the people of the world. So just keep in mind, understand what you're supporting, because Hillary is more of the same and worse. Your thoughts, talk back, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I think I'm getting that right. I'm going to ask my engineer to give me the number. But you call in if you have something that you believe needs to be said. We're happy to have you talk. The number is 888 877-474-4888. Let's now say hello to Luann Panessi until you get your calls coming in. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I'm going to get off track a little bit here, and I'm going to ask you this question. A lot of people in your audience, people that are in the baby boomer age bracket, they're very concerned about the fact that we've had a lot of our favorite rock icons like David Bowie, Merle Haggard, now Prince. They're dropping like flies, and they're very, very concerned. And so one of the questions I have is, you know, what do you see? Why do you think this is happening? And is there anything that we can do to help people that are celebrity like this who may not even realize they're in a downward spiral?
Recently, I was having a conversation with a person who said that there have been over 35 well-known performers, singers, songwriters, who've died in the last 12 months. And my response was, I would have thought there'd be more. And the reason is simple. At a time when a lot of these people were coming into their own in the late 60s, 70s, the idea was if you were a celebrity, you had to live like a celebrity. If you were young, you had to live like a young celebrity would live. Lots of drugs. A friend of mine was one of the major financial backers in Hollywood. In fact, at a time, he was probably the most significant one. And so he had a lot of parties at his house. And I would go out there when I was doing the Regis Philbin show, and I had a chance to see up close, firsthand, how many people were doing drugs, how bad was the culture, and it was bad to the bone. People would be, at 3 o'clock in the morning, you walk through the house and just be all these people just stoned out. They would be on heroin. Anything they could take, anything that was available, they were using. And then there was lots of alcohol drank, lots of smoking going on. And some of them would show up at this called the Source restaurant, which is really a very good restaurant. I eat there a lot. But the idea was that you could party hard all night, you could abuse your body, but as long as you had a healthy meal sometime during the week, everything was made well. It wasn't. Then you had the stress of what it means to be a person who may or may not be popular in a given moment, and did you make enough money to live until your next gig? And what happens when you don't use your celebrity status, your success, your wealth to grow as a human being, to help others who are not as advantaged? And that was a big problem. And so I saw at the time, because I would have conversations with these people, and it would be interesting because I would be in a party and I was a young guy, I was in my 20s, but I had best-selling health books, and I was on national television, Johnny Carson, all these shows, Mike Douglas, Merv Griffin, that I would be, not Merv Griffin, but Mike Douglas, Johnny Carson, the Today Show, Time Magazine, People Magazine, four-page spread. I was all over the place. So they'd all come and ask me questions. But when I'd suggest what they had to do to get well, they'd never do it. When they started hearing the same advice I give today, their eyes just glaze over. They weren't about to change. And then over a period of time, you'd hear how serious it would be. I only heard from them when they got really sick. If they had hepatitis, didn't want anyone to know about it, they'd come and I'd help detoxify them, get them, as you know, because you'd see them come in on Sundays at the Tri-State Healing Center, where people who didn't want anyone else around could come in, and we'd put them in a room and give them their IV drips or whatever it was. So what you're seeing is you're seeing hundreds and probably leading to thousands of performers in different fields who lived a life on the fast track who are now paying a price for it. Their body is broken down. Their body has no more brain cells, heart cells, liver cells, kidney cells to destroy. They've reached the tipping point. Now we see the consequences. Can we help them? Yes. But they have to ask for that help. The next time I'm going to do a retreat will be in August, and if any of the performers, anyone who has lived a rough life earlier on and want to try to undo the damage, they can be helped. But they can't be helped if they let fear, insecurity, and ego get in their way. And they got to change, they got to do it all. I don't help people only going a little bit. That's one of the reasons that when some people who are very famous called and says, would I help them? I said, sure. But are you willing to do the protocol? What's the protocol? And I mentioned, I'm not going to do all that. Then I can't help you. So you got to do everything you're told to do. I do not work with anyone under any circumstance who are just going to keep doing bad things and take in a supplement or something and think it's going to make a difference. It won't make a difference. So that's why they're dying, for no other reason. No other reason. And every year that goes by, you're going to see double and triple that amount. So that's what I would suggest. Let people have your phone number, because what I understand is for our upcoming 3-month health support group, about 45 people who were signed up, and we were full. That's why I haven't mentioned it. Then when you were speaking with them one-on-one, they thought it was a one-time lecture. They didn't want to be filmed talking about their conditions before and after. They weren't going to come to all the meetings, so they're excluded. So we now have room for people who want to join what would be the most comprehensive anti-aging, anti-depression, anti-anxiety, anti-hypertension, anti-diabetes, anti-overweight in history. This will be the big one. It'll be 6 meetings. You must attend all 6 meetings for the full 3 hours, every other Saturday, starting in 2 weeks from this. And so we have a few spots. Those who want to come, give me your number, Luann.
Yes, it's 631-504-6198. Again, 631-504-6198.
Thank you. Let's say hello to Charles, New Jersey. We'll take one call before we end our program. Your thoughts, Charles?
Yes, Gary. I wanted to comment. I found a resource, the only vaxxed versus unvaxxed study from Italy, which was the most vaccinated country back in late 1800s, early 1900s. And the book is called The Vaccination Superstition by John W. Hodge. It's free on Google Books. And there was over 200,000 individuals that were compared, and it was a complete failure. So, and also you could listen to the reporter who did the report on this is Joni Abbott, you know, Homegrown Health Radio on YouTube. So that's great resource.
Thank you very much, Charles. I appreciate it. I'm Gary Noll. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.